A few days ago, I was listening to a podcast called Hidden Brain, that some of you may know. And it told the story of a woman from Brazil who decided when she was young that the most important thing in her life would be to win an Academy Award. She organized everything around it. She left her home in Brazil, her family, her language, and she came to Los Angeles to become an actress. And she worked, she studied, she auditioned, she got better. No doubt she became a genuinely fine actress. And she devoted her life to attaining that elusive Academy Award. But like many people who give up everything for a career, she missed out on a lot of special moments: weddings, births, funerals, the ordinary sacraments of a family's life, the ones that don't wait for you to be available, the ones that happen while you're somewhere else pursuing something else. 25 years went by like that, 25 years of her precious life. And then at 45, she found herself going back to Brazil. No Academy Award, no partner, no children. And most of the friendships and family relationships that used to hold her up now grown distant or gone. Nieces and nephews she barely knew, now adults. Relatives she'd never see again. And she came home carrying a grief that had been accumulating quietly the whole time she thought she was simply working hard for her dream. Now, when I first heard that story, I noticed I wasn't asking myself if she'd made a mistake. That felt too easy and honestly a little bit cruel. But I noticed feeling sad. And I found myself asking, had she chosen something too small, too limited, to carry the weight of devotion of an entire human life? And then that question turned back on me the way good, uncomfortable questions do. And it made me ask, what am I organizing my life around? What am I devoting myself to? Because, my friends, we all devote our lives to something. Many of us are desperately looking for someone or something to be devoted to in life, some place to give our whole heart and attention, to channel our love. And for some, that's their spouse or partner or their children. And for many, that's a religious figure of some kind, like Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or Krishna. Giving our devotion to someone or something that brings out the highest and best is one thing. But many of us devote ourselves to activities or people that might not be so good for us, to keeping busy at all costs, to gaming or social media or politicians, to sports teams or celebrities. Pursuits that don't necessarily uplift us in the long term. And that's when devotion leaves us emptier. And here's what I've come to realize. What we devote ourselves to is not a neutral, private choice that only affects us. It is the design of a life. It shapes who we're becoming one ordinary day at a time, whether or not we ever stop to notice it happening. And it's a design that ripples out and affects all we come in contact with. And so many of us are devoted without ever quite deciding to be, to things that cannot fill us, things that leave us feeling busy but empty. Successful, but hollow. rich but purposeless, connected to a feed yet disconnected from almost everything else, engaged but alone. What we revere, my friends, matters. It shapes who we become inside and out, and it creates the world around us. But I want to pause here because I know that word reverence can be a loaded one. For some of you, it may prickle a little, a word that's reminiscent of pews you were forced to sit in as a child. And for others, it may simply feel empty, a religious word that's meaningless to you. So let me share with you what I mean by it, because it's not what you may be bracing for. Reverence, as I've come to understand it, has nothing to do with dogma or obedience or with believing impossible things because someone in authority told you to. Reverence is something much simpler, deeper, and much more demanding than that. Reverence is the capacity to recognize that something is worthy of our deepest love and attention. It's what summons us, often unbidden and sometimes very inconvenient, when we come into the presence of something larger than ourselves. Something that deserves not our trepidation, but our attention and love. Not our obedience, but our devotion. Reverence, as I see it, is love expressed through attention. Love expressed through attention. And here's why this matters to a room full of Unitarian Universalists who've mostly spent their lives learning not to bow to anything unexamined, right? What we choose as the object of our reverence is not incidental. It's formative. And we will choose something, make no mistake. And we become what we revere. Of course, our materialistic culture teaches us that money, success, and power are most worthy of our reverence. But look at what's happening to our world with those values as the locus of our devotion. We live in a world that reveres making millions at the expense of feeding millions, that sees deploying weaponry and waging wars as the answer to conflict, that wantonly extracts from and destroys our beautiful earth, that tries to dominate, control, and constrict the freedom of human expression. And these values are reinforced in our news feeds, our social media, and our government proclamations. And meanwhile, our collective misery, our hopelessness, our isolation and fear multiply. So be careful what you pay attention to, my friends. And I quote that old adage, what we focus on grows. And we see that vividly now on a macro level. And it was this question of what truly matters that quietly accompanied me throughout my sabbatical. I didn't know it then, but I wasn't simply traveling through Europe. I was learning what's deeply important in a human life. The whole design of my sabbatical was simple. Go find the places that people have called sacred for centuries. And see why and what happens there. Tiny chapels tucked into hillside gorges. Great cathedrals with ceilings soaring so high and thundering organs they make you whisper without being told to and fall to your knees in awe. Mountain caves and monasteries, old growth forests, pilgrimage routes worn smooth by feet that walked them for thousands of years before mine ever did. So when I set out, I thought I was going in search of sacred places. But when I came home, I realized I'd been learning how to recognize the sacred and bring it home into everyday life. Now, at first I assumed what made those places holy was the beautiful architecture, or the history, or what happened there, or even the relics kept behind glass. But the longer I sat in these spaces, the more I understood it was something else. Those places weren't simply beautiful. They'd become saturated, soaked through over centuries with devotion. Thousands and thousands of human beings had carried their grief there, their gratitude, their longing, their hope, their prayers. Generation after generation of reverence had shaped these spaces. And for those of you who heard my life as pilgrimage talk, you may remember the first stop on my sabbatical was Fatima in Portugal, one of the great Catholic pilgrimage sites in the world. And I'll be honest with you, a great deal of the theology there is not my theology. And I didn't come to venerate what the pilgrims around me had come to worship. And yet I found myself standing at the edge of this vast plaza in awe, watching all kinds of people, some of them clearly in real pain, crawling across the hard concrete on their knees, inch by inch toward the sanctuary, praying, asking for healing, for a child, for a marriage, or from loss, or begging for courage. And I was moved to tears. Not because I share their theology, but because I was in the presence of something that transcended whether or not I agreed with it. It was undiluted, embodied devotion. And then came Saint-Baume, deep in an ancient forest cliff in the south of France, where legend holds that Mary Magdalene spent her last 30 years in a cave. And what I most remember about that cave is the deep silence, the ancient trees surrounding it, the unmistakable sense that holiness was not something manufactured for visitors. It was something you simply encountered if you were quiet enough to notice it. A silence that had been honored there for 2,000 years. And later came Chartres and its labyrinth laid into the cathedral floor with centuries of human longing pressed into stone under our feet. And I walked it slowly, mindfully, and purposefully. And it reminded me about presence, taking one step at a time in life, and slowing down as we navigate the twists and turns of life. Fatima, Saint-Baume, Chartres, also Avila, Vézelay, Orléans, the Camino itself, mile after mile of it, and the towering mountains of the Alps, one higher than the next, majestically reaching into the heavens and spreading out into infinity. And I kept asking myself, why do I feel so drawn here? What am I looking for? What do all of these places actually have in common? And I think the answer for me was surprisingly simple. They were all places of transcendence and transformation. They all slowed me down enough to notice, to pay attention, to breathe and become fully present. And they evoked awe and devotion for this short, precious existence of ours, my friends. Which may be the deepest lesson of the whole sabbatical. The purpose of pilgrimage isn't simply to visit sacred places. It's to slow down enough to experience the miracle of life, transcending the day-to-day, and to bring reverence home into our ordinary everyday lives. And miraculously, upon my return, as I mentioned, my dream of finding a home where I could finally truly settle appeared very suddenly and unexpectedly. And last weekend, I got to move into my new home. And something surprised me almost immediately. I found myself creating little spaces of reverence in it, among all my boxes and mess, with candles and statues that remind me of what's important. An altar to help me get in touch with that sacred feeling I had on my sabbatical. And here's my little makeshift altar. So every morning when I meditate near that altar before making my cup of tea, I'm reminded what I actually want my life to be devoted to. Buddha reminds me to wake up, to be mindful and listen. Kuan Yin reminds me that compassion and love are who I want to be. Krishna, with his flute there, reminds me that joy, music, and ecstasy belong at the center of a spiritual life. And the bundle of sage and the tree of life remind me that I belong to this living earth. And of course, there's a chalice too. And that reminds me of the light of love in every human heart. A light to shine in the darkness that is both a gift and a responsibility. And a light that reminds me to serve the higher good. A light that must be tended, nurtured, and shared. So none of these objects are magical, but they're reminders of my devotion. And every single morning, they quietly ask me the same question. Nika, what do you want to devote your precious days, your life to? What kind of person are you becoming? So here's what I want us to consider. Every one of us has an altar. What have you placed upon your altar? Some of us have placed success there, some certainty, some politics, some justice, some beauty or romance, or fear or productivity, or our children, or grandchildren, or money, or love, or truth, or God. And whatever sits on that altar, visible or invisible, chosen consciously or absorbed by default, it slowly shapes the person you become. Modern life is loud, my friends, and full of distractions. Everything wants our devotion these days, and all of it whispers some version of, look at me, care about me, give me your life. So I've begun to wonder whether the deepest spiritual crisis of our time is that we've forgotten to tell the difference between what truly deserves our attention and what has merely captured it. Because here's the progression. Attention becomes devotion. Devotion becomes our character, and character becomes our destiny. So whatever keeps getting our attention day after day is quietly building the person you are becoming. So let me ask you, what enlarges your soul? What makes you kinder and more compassionate, more courageous, more alive? And what would still matter to you on your very last day on this earth? Because those things, whatever they are for you, deserve your reverence. Like Peter Mayer's song, so beautifully sung, Holy Now. Terry Tempest Williams, the writer and climate activist, said, "The world is holy. We are holy. All life is holy. Daily prayers are delivered on the lips of breaking waves, the whispering of grasses, the shimmering of leaves." And the writer Anne Lamott, in her own irreverent and holy way, has said that laughter is carbonated holiness, right, Matt? And the Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron says, rejoicing in ordinary things is not sentimental or trite. It actually takes guts. And each time we drop our complaints and allow everyday good fortune to inspire us, we enter the warrior's world. And I don't bring these to you as trite quotations. I offer them as companions from sages who've been down this road and left a marker for the rest of us. So here, my friends, are some of the ordinary doorways into reverence that you might explore, the ones our own tradition and others have handed down to us. Lighting a candle or chalice as you sit in silence. Building a small altar with symbols that awaken you, that awaken your consciousness or speak to your values. Practicing meditation where you listen to the whisperings of your own inner voice, your soul. Or taking an awe or gratitude walk, going outside with no goal except to notice the beauty and wonder around, or just to hug a tree. Or playing music that evokes emotion and uplifts you. These are all small acts of devotion. None of them require belief in anything that you don't already believe. They only require your attention, your sustained and unhurried attention, which it turns out is the rarest and most valuable thing any of us has to give. So, my friends, reverence doesn't only belong to cathedrals, sanctuaries, or mountaintops, or the far side of a pilgrimage route in Portugal or France. Sacred places are not born sacred. They become sacred because generation after generation of human beings have carried their deepest hopes, griefs, gratitudes, and love there. And reverent people create sacred places. And reverence belongs in our ordinary lives, lived with intention, because it sanctifies our lives and grants them meaning, which made me wonder, could chalice become sacred the same way, despite our relatively ordinary building in a business park? And Claudia, I want to thank you for making it so beautiful today. You have created a place, a space of beauty. If we infuse this space with meaning, reverence, love, and attention, we can create a sacred space right here in Newbury Park where people feel drawn to bring their longings, griefs and hopes and their devotion. So perhaps reclaiming reverence doesn't have to be too complicated. Perhaps it can begin in your home tomorrow morning with one deliberate act of attention, one moment of gratitude, or one intentional choice of where to place your attention that might uplift you, others, and the life that you are hoping to create. So I invite you tomorrow morning, before you reach for your phone or your coffee, I want to invite you to ask yourself just one question. What deserves my attention, my devotion today? Are you willing to try that? Because attention is never just attention. Attention becomes devotion. And slowly, almost imperceptibly, we become what we revere. My beloveds, may we find and attend to what is truly worthy of a life and of our reverence. May it be so. Amen.